It's July 27th, 2016, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's science and technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. After a quick review of some recent national tech headlines, we'll cover the local tech calendar. Melly James from the Hawaii Venture Capital Association returns to tell us about their July luncheon about the innovation economy. Also returning is Cindy Matsuki from the High Tech Development Corporation to give us a preview of the next Wetware Wednesday networking mixer, marking their fifth anniversary.
And finally, after the break, we'll check in for this hurricane season and talk about new tech and gadgets to consider during a natural disaster. Joining us are John Cummings from the city's Department of Emergency Management and, of course, Disaster Preparedness Instructor Wes Koga.
Yes, what are some of the must-have tools to help you get through a disaster? What is this thing here? We'll try to describe it. We always welcome your comments and questions as part of that conversation as well, and you can contact us by calling in or sending us a tweet after the break.
Now, we've got a couple of headlines that we covered this morning on Hawaii News Now, and one of them was the fact that Twitter has now opened up their blue checkmark verification to the general public. Before, it was a big mystery on how you would actually get a checkmark.
I mean, right. There was no established process. There are various back channels. They would essentially start with a media outlet, perhaps, and verify all of the people that work for that outlet. A lot of journalists, certainly celebrities. They say people who are public figures. But it is certainly something that I coveted for some time. And even achieving it was kind of weird because there's no way of really understanding that process. But now, just this week, they made it so that anybody can apply for a verified checkmark. They still say they're going to apply that measure. You know, are you a person of public interest? Are you someone that is likely to be spoofed or, you know, otherwise impersonated? Mm-hmm. But I think that it kind of goes down to, you know, Twitter just had their earnings. They are not growing as fast as they want, only 1% new users in the last quarter. So although everybody knows what Twitter is, they're still struggling to get people to use the service. They're focusing on that. But one of the challenges that Twitter faces is abuse, you know, certainly people who are anonymous and attacking and driving other people off of the service. So I think that making verified accounts more widely available will allow them to implement things like filters where you can say, well, I only want to read things from verified people. Now, of course, a world only populated by journalists and celebrities doesn't sound like a great world, but as they expand that bubble, I think just like Facebook requiring your real names, it hopefully will generally raise the level of civility on the service.
Yeah, and I think it's a step in the right direction in terms of trying to figure out how to deal with all the sort of negative things that are happening on Twitter, a lot of the trolls, a lot of the harassment that's going on. I don't think the blue checkmark is going to actually alleviate all of that, but it's kind of a step in the right direction.
Well, as we know from our presidential campaign, having a blue checkmark does not stop you from causing a little trouble out there.
That's true. Well, and then, of course, we talked a little bit about Windows 10. Of course, Windows 10 got launched 1 year ago, but almost to the day. And the reason why we're bringing it up again is the fact that on Friday, the 29th, the free upgrade turns into $119. So if you happen to have Windows 7, Windows 8, and have been sort of thinking about, well, whether or not you've withstood all the forced attempts to get you to upgrade, but now this is the last ditch effort to convince you that if you don't upgrade, you may be faced with $119 charge if you do decide after the 29th.
Microsoft can't win. Of course, they got a lot of grief, and I think some of it deserved for the various ways they tried to trick you into upgrading into Windows 10, moving the accept button, making it so that if you dismiss it, you're accepting all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that after this free period expires on Friday, they're going to get a lot of grief from people who feel they should still be able to get it for free. So it's a tough place to be.
Well, the last thing we wanted to chat a little bit about is Yahoo getting purchased by Verizon. It's kind of a surprise, but if you think about it, Verizon actually bought AOL. Now they got Yahoo. They got a lot of content titles under their belt now. And, you know, surprisingly enough, Yahoo, which is one of the original properties, still has about 1 billion monthly users.
Absolutely.
And, of course, you know, tonight I'm going to use it because, the picture is going to go up on Flickr. And, you know, Flickr is one of those services that Yahoo bought a long time ago. And
Yahoo
still
Mail
part of,
is still huge. Yeah. Yahoo Finance.
Yahoo News. I mean, Kitty Kirk is still part of Yahoo News.
Fantasy football even. Yeah. So I think they're bringing a lot of value to Verizon. They're going to merge it with AOL for their many popular blogs and many users. There's a lot of eyeballs. And it's the next chapter for Yahoo.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the headlines. That was on Hawaii News Now this morning. And of course, we love covering some of this national news stuff. But we want to get on to the local stuff. So I want to welcome Mele James from the Hawaii Venture Capital Association. She's here to tell us about the August lunch, actually moving to the beginning of August. And, of course, it's featuring an important panel, which is slated to discuss innovation and technology. Welcome to the show, Mele.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks, Ryan.
So this tell us about this panel, because it's more than just talking about innovation. I mean, these people are running for office.
Yes, these people are running for office. And the reason for our luncheon on this date was because we wanted to get in before the election coming up in the next couple
of weeks. Right, which is like on the 13th. So who do you have on the slate?
Yeah, so from Congressional District 2, we've got Shay Chan Hodges. Congressional District 1, Colleen Hanabusa and Shirlene Ostroff. From the U.S. Senate, we've got Miles Shiratori and McConnie Christensen. And, of course, I'll be moderating.
So when you talk about the innovation economy, I mean, that's a very broad umbrella and certainly, unfortunately, I would say a growing one. But how would you articulate the focus, the specific areas of policy that these elected officials and hopefully re-elected officials as they attempt, you know, what is it that they're going to be speaking to?
Yeah, it's a great question, because this conversation is very different from the conversation we have with some of our state legislators, which we've had those in the past. This is really looking at from a federal level, you know, what kinds of resources are they putting in to creating an innovative industry here in Hawaii? We see that there's a brain drain, and what kinds of things are they going to do to help with keeping smart people from leaving? In addition, you know, kind of beyond tourism and the defense industries, what are their ideas for creating a globally competitive Hawaii to strengthen our economy? A lot of times federal funding comes in the forms of helping with manufacturing, and that's kind of on a national level where, you know, manufacturing makes up about 12% of the economy, not in Hawaii. In Hawaii, it's about 1%. So, you know, what are some of their thoughts around, you know, how to help innovative small business in Hawaii, you know, being globally competitive, and not necessarily with just manufacturing and some of those traditional ways that federal funding has been used?
So are you thinking that the invited panelists have some ideas on what sort of policy they might want to start to influence? Because the ones that are already there, the incumbents, I mean, they're all already on committees. They are probably not introducing new stuff, but they are, you know, there's things that are already kind of in the works.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of curious to see how they would perhaps fit into a machinery that's kind of already in existence.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what we're looking forward to hearing about. I mean, it's a lot of it's about what their position is, what are their ideas, and actually really trying to drill down on the specifics. So, you know, we can talk about the brain drain all day long, but what are specifically some things that they want to get done that can actually move the needle forward?
Well, you know, the brain drain and is certainly a topic that we talk about quite a bit in terms of even as you grow an innovation economy, a lot of times startups and entrepreneurs will relocate to pursue greater opportunities or be in a bigger pond, essentially, outside of Hawaii. Just recently, there was great news for Area Metrics, a startup started from Hawaii, but doing very well in Seattle. And I was happy to see that although it was described as a Seattle startup, the write-up in the Business Journal talked about how it got started here. So I think another aspect to the conversation that I've been really interested in lately is how seeing a success like that, leaving Hawaii, is not necessarily a black mark. It's not necessarily a failing on Hawaii's part in terms of us being able to generate and support and nurture a startup like that and have it find success as it grows beyond Hawaii.
Definitely. Definitely, Ryan. You know, Area Metrics, they're great friends of ours. And they did start here. And sometimes for a company, it makes sense to leave, whether it's access to capital, whether it's partnerships. You know, they're getting into a lot of these huge malls across America. And for them to do a meeting with someone in Arizona versus Los Angeles versus, you know, Washington State, they need to be able to make those quick, you know, hour-long flights versus the 5.5-hour-long flights from Hawaii. And it made sense for them from multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, looking at some of these candidates, you know, looking at the, you know, the CNBC, we keep talking about, oh, Hawaii actually moved up one notch. We are not 50th, you know, worst state to do business, and we're 49th now. Baby steps. But, you know, what are they going to do to create more business-friendly environment in Hawaii? And as a lot of our startups do grow, and that's awesome. Like some of our companies, I mean, Hobnob just raised 2.2 million. Arian Metrics just raised, I think, 2.2 million. These are really wonderful things where our startups are moving along. It's no longer about the two co-founders. Like I always say, two co-founders not paying themselves, eating ramen and Mountain Dew and staying up till 4 a.m. coding and, you know, not making any money. These companies actually have 4, 5, 11 people they're employing. Mm-hmm. They're actually moving into challenges that these startups have around small business, right? Unemployment tax. Like they have employees now. How can Hawaii start to change some things? A lot of municipalities across the country create their areas to become more attractive for these companies mm-hmm. to not only start, but to stay. And when you start seeing companies staying, that's when you start seeing that kind of job creation. And that's the stuff that we really would love to see, where we see the innovation sector as being a real economic player here.
Now, you know, of the panelists that you have featured coming up on this luncheon, I know you have some questions in mind. Some of them probably have a varying degree of involvement with our local tech community. So have you been able to sort of gauge which ones are kind of supportive of it, really in it, you know, in terms of participation, or perhaps just know it from a cursory view?
So, you know, again, we couldn't invite all the candidates. So this is a select few. And of course, if we wanted to, we'd have, you know, 30 people in the room. It'd be, you know, an 8-hour session. But we've done a little bit of research and mm-hmm. we're really interested in certain candidates that we saw, especially on their websites and other kind of social media, as being interested and supportive of technology. We're not trying to say we're supporting these candidates or not. This is really just a discussion. But we think we've got a nice, you know, breadth of different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And the questions are really going to be geared upon really trying to drill down and get some interesting information from that kind of federal perspective, and something that's really important for us to think about, you know, beyond what's happening within the state.
No, that's great. That's great.
And yeah, certainly with an audience of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs and people in the startup community, that's what that kind of venue is for, these kind of events are for. If they're not familiar with the community, this is certainly a great way to become familiar and to introduce themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of a it might be a little bit embarrassing if you get exposed to not knowing what this tech community is all about.
But as long as they have a Pokemon Go slide,
right? I'm glad to hear that, Mel, you guys did some research and you kind of know which ones are in it or not.
Yeah.
So tell us where, when, and how much is this event going to take?
Great.
Cost.
So it's Wednesday, August 3rd. At the Plaza Club from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. The cost is $29 for members and $39 for non-members. Mm-hmm. And we're actually partnered with Entrepreneurs Foundation of Hawaii. So EF Hawaii is our partner for this event. And they've been a huge help with us trying to wrangle these candidates to confirm, which is why we have a pretty tight turnaround with this luncheon. But we've gotten a huge amount of support and people signing up already. So we think and know this is going to be a fabulous discussion.
Great, great, great. So you think you might be adding any new names later on?
Or? We may be.
Okay. Well, stay tuned for that.
HVCA.org.
Yes, hvca.org.
Well, thanks, Melly, for joining us.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks, Ryan.
And, of course, next up we have Cindy Matsuki from the High Tech Development Corporation. She's here to tell us about the 5th anniversary of Wetware Wednesday and, of course, the upcoming Hawaii Annual Code Challenge. Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Thanks for having me.
5 years. So what, Wetware's been going on for 5 years?
5 years, since 2011.
Wow. Of course, it was Thirsty Third Thursdays.
Was it Thirsty Thursday?
Yeah, that's how it first started off.
And have you a sense of how it's evolved over the last 5 years? How has it changed? How has it contributed to the networking environment for, you know, coders and techies?
I think when it first started, it was intended for industry to meet university students and faculty, and it was for the faculty to understand what was happening in the industry and what's the latest and greatest in the software community. Mm-hmm. It's kind of evolved. I mean, we don't have too much. I mean, I'd like more university participation, but it's become more of an industry community type networking event. Mm-hmm. I think it's grown. I haven't been here for all 5 years.
Well, yeah, you started maybe about 3 years ago,
about
right?
3 years
yeah.
ago.
Mm-hmm. And then you've been taking, you have this event under your umbrella.
Yes. That was like the first thing they told me when I started. You got Wilbur Wednesday.
Oh, good. So in terms of your, I guess, ideal direction for Wetware Wednesday, mm-hmm. how would you like to see it kind of evolve from here on out?
Well, we've done it a few times, but I am trying to make Wetware into the innovation showcase for companies. Mm-hmm. And so this year, I've actually gotten a lot of interest in sponsors, which is great. So I'd like it to be the event to showcase what Hawaii's companies are innovating in. One successful example was when we hosted it at Oceanet. So they were the sponsor, and it was a huge turnout. They held it in their offices, and it was a great showcase for them and for that community to see what they were doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And for this fifth anniversary, do you have anything top of mind that you wanted to showcase?
Not specifically. We're going to have cupcakes.
Oh, cupcakes.
Of course. That's you can't celebrate without cupcakes. But we are featuring. So the Office of Enterprise Technology Services mm-hmm. is our sponsor. And it ties nicely together as they're going to launch their hack event, the Hawaii Annual Code Challenge. And so we thought this would be a great event to help them launch that. So this was an idea that came up between the governor and Todd Nakapoi of ETS. And so they'll both be there, and they're going to talk about the challenge on top of just the general festive.
So tell us, in your words, what is this challenge all about, this code challenge?
I think it's really, well, part of it is I know that ETS is looking for good people because I know they want to hire good software developers. And so this is one good way of them bringing that community to them. The other thing is they want to know what kind of solutions people could come up with for some of the state challenges. What are people struggling with? And a lot of times I don't think state workers see that. They see the internal side.
Mm-hmm.
But if they go out and ask the public, what are you struggling with that we could work on? And maybe help us come up with some solutions. I think this is that opportunity.
So ways that the community, the citizens can better interface with government
mm-hmm.
and that point of interface. So are there ideas that perhaps could present the better seamless connection between citizens and government?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's awesome that they're open to this.
Well, there have been a number of hackathons, and so one from at the state level certainly makes sense. There have been at the city level, very specific departments, very specific problems and challenges from trans transit mm-hmm. to campaign finance. Bert is actually helping put together this hack event, HACC, so you'll also be there, I would imagine, to answer some questions.
I think I probably will be. Oh, and Do you have a featured guest that you might want to mention?
Bert Lum.
No. That's not a draw.
Oh, okay.
A featured guest. I mean, we have all kinds of people. We have the governor, David Ige. We have who?
Well, that's the one. I mean, I don't think you mentioned him.
I did. I said he and Todd will be there talking about this event.
Well, very good. So when is this taking place?
So I want everybody to remember it's on a Friday. It's a
Friday.
Wednesday,
formerly the Thirsty Third Thursday on a Friday.
Yes.
Just making that clear. Okay.
That was confusing.
So it's like Fiesta Friday or something?
It's Wetware Wednesday Friday.
Cupcake Friday.
So it's going to be August 5th, which is after Melly's event. That Friday at Gordon Biersch from 6 to 8.
Very good. We'll put that up on our show notes. Thanks, Cindy, for joining
us. Yes, please register. Thank you for having me. Oh, one last thing.
Okay.
Yes.
We're having a logo challenge. It's been 5 years since we first created our logo. So I want to
throw
out.
The HDC logo or the
Wetware Wednesday logo?
Wetware Wednesday logo. So if you have any thoughts, send them to me at cindy@htdc.org.
Calling graphic designers.
Yes,
well,
please.
Okay. We'll get to that later. We'll put that up on our show notes if there's a competition page.
Yes.
Thanks, Cindy, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a short break, and when we return, we'll be joined by John Cummings and Wes Koga to talk about emergency preparedness gadgets. We got a whole room full of gadgets
here. A number of metallic and blinking and shining things. I'm still very curious what's going on. What are the most important tools to have on hand when the power goes out? Of course, we'd love your ideas. You can give us a call at 941-3689 or toll-free from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689.
And, of course, we're monitoring our favorite gadget, which is our smartphone and laptop and Twitter. You can reach us at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe. Hey.
This week on Invisibilia, we explore the power of clothing.
When you look in the mirror, you look like someone else, and then you feel like someone else.
The identities we take on.
Well, it's escapism.
How clothes can change us.
I was like a ghost, almost.
And even save us.
I was different. I was different all the way through.
I'm Hanna Rosen. That's on the next Invisibilia from NPR.
This evening at 7, right after Counterspin. On Saturday the 30th, join us for a sophisticated evening of jazz in the Atherton Studio. It's piano wizard Tommy James and bassist John Colivas in a program of mostly Ellington that will introduce you to gems beyond Satin Doll and Take the A-Train. Make your reservations at 955-8821 during business hours or at hprtickets.org. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership. Wealth Management. Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Noheya Gallery, Kaiser Permanente, and Hastings and Pleadwell, a communication company.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And, of course, joining us today are John Cummings and Wes Koga. John is the Public Information Officer over at the City and County of Honolulu Department of Emergency Management. And, of course, he's a longtime survival gadget geek.
Wes, meanwhile, is a teacher for the DOE. He teaches ham radio license classes. Yes, a volunteer for the Humane Society and is also an expert on disaster preparedness for pets.
And, of course, with another active tropical storm season upon us, so of course we can never do too much to be prepared. And of course we'd love to hear your questions and comments. That number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And we want to welcome you all to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thank you, Bert.
Well, you know, this is almost like Christmas in July because we usually have a gadget show around the November, December time frame because we want to entice our listeners to think about gadgets for gifts. But you guys have really outdone yourselves. I mean, this is great. I mean, we're gonna have a good time trying to describe all these gadgets. But before we get into the gadgets,
sure,
John, I want to ask you. You know, we kind of were watching Darby, and you know, Darby looked like it was kind of skirting the south of the islands and perhaps even, you know, potentially missing Oahu because I saw the big, you know, sort of the big activity happening north of Oahu.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, boom, around, what, 6:30, 7 o'clock, something like a big cell started to happen right over Oahu.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a surprise. I mean, you guys had to really react pretty quickly.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing with these storm systems or tropical storms and hurricanes. You know, we may miss the winds, but on the backside, that quadrant, we they carry a lot of moisture. And we saw this in spades with Darby. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. Nuuanu had 11.5 inches of rain in a six-hour period. Downtown Honolulu, you know, close to that in like 10 inches. You know, that's a lot of water. We saw with the evidence of that. You know, Kalihi Stream, unfortunately, overflowed in a lot of areas. A lot of folks got their homes flooded in Liliha. I mean, it just came down. And we always warn folks with weather stuff like this, the flooding. You know, that's a second.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's unheard of to think that the freeway gets flooded.
You know, I have not seen rain like that since the 2006. Remember that, like, the 30 days?
Right.
Manoa Valley, right?
Yeah. But this just came down in such a short period of time. It was just massive amounts of water.
Yeah, so, you know, that was, in terms of an emergency, I think the first responders, like Department of Emergency Management, you guys had a lot of work to do because you had to clear the freeway. You had to do a lot of short-term kind of recovery. But in terms of the actual community losing power, for the most part, there wasn't a whole lot of power outages.
No, I was surprised with the lightning we were coming down. I mean, in Pauoa, by my dad's house at Kamehameha Heights, I was surprised we kept had the powers on. And the best part of it all, as bad as it was, nobody got killed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nobody got severely injured. Unfortunately, we did have some property damage. But, you know, the wind side was not a lot of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I work at Dole Cannery, my office for my day job, Point Information Service. Dole Cannery in Iwilei, one of the places definitely impacted by the by the flooding. And it definitely made me aware of the susceptibility, the vulnerability of technology. Now, the facility does a really good job, Bert, there, trying to keep things running. But when you have that kind of water coming in off the street, certainly affecting your escalators, your elevators, and a lot of electronic systems, it is pretty disruptive. So, Wes, although we're going to be talking soon about technology that helps you get through an emergency. Certainly, as we become more reliant on things that blink and beep and connect us to our Pokemon Go game, we are in some ways a little more vulnerable to disruption as a result of emergencies. Would you agree?
Yes, because that's basically what I saw when on Sunday when that thunderstorm came through. I live in Cunningley. Mm-hmm. The first thing that went out, we had a power outage for about 30 seconds. The cable went out for the rest of the night, never came back up. Then you try to figure out, okay, what are you going to be doing or what are you going to be listening to? Or do you just go to sleep? Hard to say what you're going to be doing after that. And I think a lot of people don't think about what are they going to do if they have, especially with their kids, how do you keep them occupied? Do you just set them, go to bed?
Right.
Luckily, I was on my internet never went out. Yep. So I just picked up my tablet and was playing with that until my power died on that.
Yeah, you know, in terms of power outages, as much as the rain did kind of cause a lot of debris and sort of disruption on the roadway, as far as, you know, anybody that was at home, I mean, I think they could still watch TV, you know, get on the internet, enjoy whatever appliances that they have in this 21st century, because the power never went out. No. Now, if there was maybe first, before we get into the fact that, you know, there may be a hurricane that could, you know, disrupt some power delivery on Oahu or anywhere else in the state, what do you have in terms of, what do you sense this particular season to be like? I mean, I know last season we had like something like some ungodly 15 or so storms that came through, but none of them hit, which we're very thankful for. What does this season look like?
Well, you know, going into the hurricane season this past May, the Weather Service did tell us, you know, we're going to have a busy season, not as busy as the last two in 14 and 15, but it was going to be busy, and they were spot on. I mean, we had a lot of systems brewing. We had Darby come through. We still have some unsettled weather off of California where we get a lot of these strong storms from. But as we transition from the warmer waters during El Nino to the cooler waters in La Nina, it's better for us. But we're in that transitional period right now. The more cold water we have between us and California, the better for keeping those strong storms from crossing over into our operational area. So, you know, hopefully if we get systems they form later in this year when the water is even cooler, and that just kills the energy for a hurricane and tropical storm.
Mm-hmm. Now, Wes, we mentioned you're an amateur radio instructor. Bert and I are both proud hams as well. Mm-hmm. And certainly during an emergency, the amateur radio corps steps up to be able to provide communication when the power's out, when the cell network might be down, when your internet connection might be down. And we're talking on radio. And I think we started promoting this particular program talking about hand-cranked radios, which to me is certainly a good basic sort of technology to start with, because the transmission of that information doesn't require any landlines or wires. It can be run on batteries or and such, and the reception of it is relatively affordable. Doesn't require a computer, for example, to get that information. So in the case of Darby, for example, did you see application of amateur radio to help get information out when the power was out?
There was quite a bit of activity, or there was some activity with the amateur radios. There's actually two amateur radio setups or organizations that the hams operate with. One is the ARES, ARES, which is the Amateur Radio Emergency Service. The other is the RACES, which is the, I can't remember what the acronym is.
Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service.
Civil Emergency, which is state sponsors. So there was quite a bit of traffic on those two networks. There's also a digital network that was kind of active. I was off and on monitoring both, but I was more or less involved with trying to make sure my house didn't flood.
Well, you know, one of the things about the ham radio community, which I think is really, really notable, is the fact that they think of their operations without, without power. Right. So if they are in real sort of a situation where the power is out, they always have some kind of alternative power source. They have, you know, whether it's battery or some other type of source. But then all the transmitters, their antenna is independent. Right. So all the facility that is able to transmit from one, you know, one ham user to another is independent of the existing, let's say, cell network or electrical network.
Right. With the amateur radios, basically the handheld radios, the batteries on them typically will last anywhere between 8 to 10 hours. Mm-hmm. And then most of the people who are interested with the emergency broadcast side of the amateur aspect, they wind up getting like car batteries, or there is some new battery technology coming out where people pick up those and they're powering their base stations off of that. Mm-hmm. And the advantage with that is that you have more power available, hence a longer range.
Now, John, with the city's Department of Emergency Management, I know you have the control or command center over at the Fossey Municipal Building in the basement. Lots of computer screens, a lot of technology there. Apart from radio communications, for our listeners who aren't aware, what other technology or even new technology forms the basis of the platforms that you use to keep information flowing during an emergency?
I'll tell you one thing we do have that's still in place for a long time. We have a dedicated copper J line. It's a hardened telephone line that is our kind of our last resort to connect our county emergency operations together with Hawaii Emergency Management Agency and a lot of other state and federal organizations on Oahu. To back that up, we also have satellite communications that's redundant into the building. We have the city's 800 megahertz system, which we have access to out of our office too, and then standard digital telephone service, a few POTS lines. So we, you know, we try to double up on information equipment as much as possible, because when we're activated, we have what we call bunker mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we only know and can only respond to what information we have coming from the outside. So we rely on multiple modes of information, getting information from our volunteers, information from our RACIs and amateur radio folks, information from our responders and secondary responders in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So we can make decisions and also get them assistance out in the field to help them clear roads, open highways, you know, evacuate folks and all that. So the technology is very important for us to be able to do our job.
I love that you described the copper wire, though. I mean, still, again, we're going as cutting edge as we are. Some of that fundamental technology is still important. It's right to that classic phone, red phone, that you pick up and it connects instantly to something.
Well, and I like the fact that you describe it as being sort of this bunker mentality, because the command center is really kind of in a bunker. And if you're in there hunkered down, you still have to have the communication means to find out what is going on outside.
Yeah, we're actually, you know, as far as our EOC goes, it was opened in 1975 in April, and it was designed around a whole different threat. Back that time, we were worried about nuclear warfare from our friends in Russia. But we've evolved now. We still look at that as a possibility, but we primarily plan for multiple hazards, multi-hazards. So natural disasters, human-caused disasters, chemical spills, maybe a nuclear attack, terrorist attack. So that's kind of our playing field now. It's really evolved since we opened up in 75.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, both Ryan and I, we've, you know, gone through CERT, and I know there's a much more active effort to get citizens involved with preparing for a disaster and try to be equipped with whatever you need to have in order to survive, you know, however many days it might take before any help might come around. So I want to kind of get into some of the things that you brought in here, which is if you were here in a studio, it's like a gadget fest. you know, one of the key things is having to perhaps cook food or, you know, heat
boil
up some water.
Water.
If you don't have any, if you don't have something that could readily, let's say, start like cook up some ramen or something. I mean, what is this device that you have here?
That is
I'm going to hurt somebody.
No, it looks like a pot. So it looks
pot,
like a pot,
yeah.
Like you could actually, you know, potentially put it on a stove, but it's actually much more than that, right?
Yeah, that unit there is basically, let's say, hot pot for boiling water, which mates up to what I brought today was this BioLite stove system.
Mm-hmm.
And the BioLite started as a Kickstarter project about 3 years ago. I love and hate Kickstarter. I love Kickstarter because it's really innovative. I hate the wait.
Yeah.
You know? Like, pay now. See you like 16 months.
Yeah.
So I was really interested in the BioLite stove. I watched the reviews, and then I tried to ignore the Kickstarter, and then it showed up at Sports Authority. And so I actually bought two of them.
From the time you saw it in Kickstarter to the time it showed up in Sports Authority, well, how many months was that?
Well, a little while.
Okay.
Maybe 2 years.
Okay.
Maybe 2 years.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, you know. And the BioLite stove, basically, it's based on what's called a rocket stove, and it uses injected air, and your fuel is basically just twigs and things to get the fire going. And the neat thing with the rocket stove is that you, as it heats, there's a thermocouple in here that actually transfers heat energy over to its battery, and it charges this internal battery. And thus, you can charge all your tech goodies. And there you can hear the fan going.
Well, you can hear the fan going. So it has a battery in there, but as you heat up the little fire of twigs and stuff like that, it has a thermocouple, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that thermocouple is sort of recharging the battery,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So it's recharging the battery, so when later in the evening you can charge some of your tech devices, your iPhone. It even comes with a little LED lantern that plugs into it too. So it's a really neat, innovative system. And again, you don't have to use liquid fuel. You use what's on the ground, the twigs and the branches and things like that.
No, you still have to stoke that thing. I mean, twigs and branches aren't going to last very long.
No, you have to keep sliding them in from the side, top, and drop it off. So you got to monitor the stove. Unlike a gas stove, you set it and you walk off. But the idea is, you know, it's innovative, uses what's in your environment. It isn't dependent on liquid fuels, gas fuels. And it just runs, and then you get added benefit of being able to charge your devices.
Yeah, it's not quite a Mr. Fusion from Back to the Future, no. But still pretty impressive. So what does a BioLite go for?
I think we said about $120, $130.
Yeah, I see $129 at BioLite.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Fantastic.
Well, we'll put up some of these on our show notes. And, of course, you know, I think we'll probably find some links on Amazon as well. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
What are you doing? You're breaking the pot there.
There are toys in the studio.
No, this is great. Okay, so Wes, take a pick on which one that you want to talk about, because there's a bunch of pretty cool ones.
What I have is what they call a Lucy, or it's a company that makes it. It's an inflatable solar-powered lantern. So what you have on it is it has a solar cell on top of it. It has a series of LEDs on side of it, and it has an inflatable cylinder that is your diffuser for your light. What I like about it is that if you ever take a shower in the dark, you can hang it up in the shower cabinet. This thing's waterproof. And the advertising that they do with these things is that you throw them inside of your swimming pool, light up your swimming pool for a party or such, and they actually make one that is multicolored for that purpose.
It looks a little bit like a candle holder, a large tumbler, or if you imagine those lanterns that go up, you know, in Chinese festivals.
Right,
but
it's
all plastic. I like the inflatable part, so it adds that diffuser for it. But what you're saying is, because it's solar powered, you could probably just leave this sitting on your bathroom counter, for example. It just looks like a glass that you've left sitting out. But when that power goes out, you have a light source that way.
It folds up. When you deflate it, it folds down to a package that's about 4 inches in diameter and about an inch thick. And what I do is I just leave it inside of my window.
Now, how long? I mean, okay, so you can charge it up with this, you know, with the sun. How long does that battery actually last?
I've had it running for about 6 hours. It has two settings on it, the high and low. With the low setting, I've never had it on longer than about 6 hours.
That's a pretty good one, because like you said, if you have to perhaps take a shower, you have to hose on the outside, and you don't have a light, you know, this is going to be very helpful in seeing what you're hosing down.
We have posted a couple of pictures on our Twitter profiles. You can go to mine, twitter.com/Hawaii. But again, we'll post photos and links for all of this on our show notes at bitemarkscafe.org. But we're enjoying describing them as best we can.
That's right. John, what do you got? I mean, I don't know if this is one of yours. This might be another one of Wes's, but John, you brought a whole backpack full of stuff.
I have my everyday carry bag. So I keep along with my keys and stuff in there. I'm a flashlight fanatic. I have probably three different flashlights and a headlamp in there. I keep a portable solar panel to power up my iPad, and also a couple of storage batteries in there. An 550 cord, a first aid kit, a water purification system.
Water purification. Man, what would you? Well,
we have to take a quick break.
That's right. I want to tease the break. I want to hear, John, about your water purification system that we as regular people can go out and purchase. But before we do that, we want to hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with both John Cummings and Wes Koga about the must-have disaster preparedness device list.
And we will not forget the pet owners among you because of Wes's specialty in pet preparedness. So if you've got a question, you can call 941-3689 or reach us from the Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. You are listening to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi, this is Ray Cruz inviting you to join me tonight from 8 to 10 for Latin Beat. I'll be playing classic Afro-Cuban Latin jazz, Latin big band classics, and share the latest releases in Latin jazz. That's Latin Beat tonight from 8 to 10 here on HBR2, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. See you tonight.
This week, HECO announced it will partner with the Navy to build a solar farm at Pearl Harbor. It's just one partnership that HECO CEO Alan Oshima says will be developed to meet the 100% renewable energy benchmark. We'll talk with him about HECO's place in Hawaii's energy future tomorrow morning at 8 on The Conversation.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Straub Clinic and Hospital and Gourmet Events Hawaii.
Well, welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. And we're talking to John Cummings and Wes Koga, both of whom who've brought giant backpacks full of great gadgets about safety for you and your pets in the event of a disaster.
And, of course, you can give us a call here. That number is 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Right before the break, we were talking about water purification. Now, if you're at home and you filled up your tub and you got water that you can last for maybe, you know, a bunch of days. But if you had the situation where you had to perhaps pull some water out of a catchment system or something, John, what would you do in terms of purifying that water?
You know, we can go for a couple of weeks without food, but water, 2-3 days tops if it's really hot. So you need to have your water, right? So the most simple thing you can do is you can boil water. Rolling boil for 2 to 3 minutes. You can chemical sterilize with chlorine, 8 drops per gallon of water, or you can get a professional filtration system. You want one that is rated to get rid of like the protozoa and the really nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of filters you see on the market now, they're charcoal filters. Mm-hmm. They take out sediment taste, but they don't get rid of the nasties in there. Mm. And that's what you want to get rid of, is the viruses and stuff.
Now, boiling will get rid of the nasties.
Boiling will get rid of it too. As will putting clear, clean water that may be questionable into plastic bottles and exposing it to direct sunlight for 6 hours. That's called solar disinfection.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good point, that charcoal doesn't quite get rid of the bugs so much as... So the chemical tablets and such, is that
that's
recommended?
Another, you can get the chemical tablets. The good thing with them, they work. The bad thing, the water tastes terrible. It tastes like iodine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, versus whatever else. One of the things I carry, I keep in my backpack all the time, is I have a Life Straw. I picked this up. It looks like a big blue cigar tube. And
life
with this
straw.
One, Life Straw, and it's good for just about any type of water, really. Now, the caveat with these filtration systems is they won't take out nasty chemicals, so you need to get the cleanest water supply you can.
Mm-hmm.
But a system like Life Straw will take out the protozoa, the viruses, and all the nasty stuff.
So how does a Life Straw work? I mean, you have to run the water through them.
There's an inlet end, which is a big opening. This is the outlet end, which is a straw, so you just put it in your mouth and you drink.
Oh, so you're actually using that as a straw.
Yeah, as a straw itself.
So like if you had, let's say, you know, water, stream water is coming down and you can pull some water out of the stream.
Yeah, you know, out of the gutter if you had to. Again, you know, with any filtration system or whatever, you want to use the cleanest water you can. So that might mean pre-filtering it through a sediment filter, which is charcoal, sand, and gravel, mm-hmm. using different layers of cloth. But you don't want muddy water because that'll kill the life of any filter system really early.
Right. Now, Wes, you... have been unloading your backpack with a bunch of stuff. What do you have there?
Well, I also have a water filter here. This is a Sawyer. It's a squeeze system. Instead of using like a straw system, you have a plastic bag that you fill up with water. You attach it to the filter, and then you can squeeze it.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like a big empty toothpaste tube
with a
little canister at the end. So what do you put in the bag? Dirty water?
You can put the dirty water in the bag and then squeeze it out and then basically just squeeze the water through instead of having to suck on the straw. You can use it as a straw.
Like the Life Straw.
Like the Life Straw. And what's nice about this particular one is it's actually designed that it comes with a large syringe that you can actually backflush it. So if it gets clogged, you can flush it out and theoretically you can use it for a longer period of time.
Well, we've got a bunch of gadgets to get through, and we want to welcome, but we also want to welcome one of our listeners who's been waiting patiently. We want to welcome Randy to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm wondering what constitutes a drop when you say 8 drops per gallon?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, like,
good question.
What I keep at home, I actually have a little bottle that I got from, where did I pick it from? I think it was from a drugstore a while back, but it's actually got an eyedropper in it. So, you know, if you have any type of eyedropper system like that, that's what I use to count the 8 drops off. That's the easiest thing. So I keep, I have a plastic bottle with a built-in eyedropper and a squeeze bottle, and I keep that with the Clorox in there, and I just need it. In fact, I use that, I have 35 gallons of water that I chlorine purified with, and that's 40 drops each one. That took a little while to count it off, but that's the best way for me to keep track is get a bottle that's designated as a, with an eyedropper in it.
And let's see, what else do you have over there, Wes? I mean, you got... Oh, you know, this thing is kind of cool. You actually brought this thing that looks like a
hat. It's a full-size.
It looks like a hat, and I thought maybe I should put it on, but it's actually an emergency
cone. What it is a traffic safety cone.
Uh-huh.
It's a 16, it folds flat. It opens up into a 16-inch cone made out of basically plastic and fabric. What I use it for is I also have an electronic road flare, and what I do with the electronic road flare is if I have to use the cone, I put the electronic road flare inside. I've cut it open on the bottom,
mm-hmm.
so I can put the road flare inside, and basically it makes a light light up traffic.
Oh, so so that actually is something that you could have on the road that's lit up?
Right.
It's actually called Pack-A-Cone, and yeah, it's a full-size traffic cone that compresses into a flat square. Very nice.
So if you're having to fix a tire or something like that, the more visible you make yourself, the safer you're going to be. And that's the whole idea behind it.
Very lights. Good. Well, that's definitely a flicker shot there. John, what else you got in that big backpack of yours?
Kind of like what Wes has out here. I carry a colossal solar panel and several storage batteries and so I can power my iPad if I need to do it.
Well, that is something that is very popular. I mean, we've got a version of that, but you know where you have solar panels that are folded up into something that is about the size of a folder, right? And that's pretty handy. You can charge up your smart device, your smartphone, your iPad.
I tell you, the LED and solar panel technology in the last few years has just taken leaps and bounds. You know, solar panels when we were in school, they're in glass, they're like the size of a truck. Now you can get them fold up and roll up. And LEDs, I tell you, once the LED lights came on, the prices were good. I got rid of all of my standard light flashlights, and I just love it because they're good in the batteries. They're extremely bright white light, and they're just the best way to go now for lighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the company that Bert and I work with,
Green Path
Technologies, but this is Goal Zero. You've probably seen them in stores. Yeah. Wes,
what is that, Wes?
What I have here is a rechargeable keychain flashlight.
That one's cool.
This one runs about $12. It has two settings, so you can have a low setting, which puts out about as much light as the small one-cell mag lights, but it will also have a high setting, which puts out 45 lumens of light.
That's pretty bright.
It weighs a third of an ounce. They're under $12, and I've recharged this particular one 4 times in the last 8 months.
And how would you recharge that?
It uses the same thing that you use to recharge your cell phone, a micro USB.
Nice. Now, John, one of the things that comes up, in addition to the water and perhaps survival food that you put into your body during an emergency situation, is perhaps handling what comes out. We've talked about the sort of the if you're a pledge supporter for HBR, you can get a crank radio, for example. Yeah. But one of the questions was, well, what is there something else, a new idea that hasn't yet been tapped? And you actually have a solution for that, correct?
Yeah, you know, waste management, personal waste management is a big issue because you gotta contain it, you gotta keep it clean because you don't want people getting sick. So actually, one of our folks in our office, Crystal Van Beelen, several years ago started promoting a poop bucket. And basically, it's a 5-gallon commercial bucket with a lid that is basically like a toilet lid. And then you line it with a plastic bag, multiple plastic bags, and then you can put cat litter inside to absorb a lot of the urine and stuff. And you use that in place of, you know, because you need water to flush the toilet, right? So the idea is, you know, that's where you would use use a poop bucket. When it's full, you tie it up, and you store it someplace away from food, away from where people are, until you can access it. And it's pretty simple.
That's a great idea because, I mean, you know, outside of that, what would you be doing, digging a hole in your backyard? I mean,
12 by 12 by 12, and have to use lye and other stuff. And again, it's going to leach down. So, you know, that portable 5-gallon bucket is the way to go. It really is.
And Wes, again, we've mentioned a few times, your niche, one of your niches is keeping pets safe during emergency. I'm a cat owner. Certainly when there's thunder and lightning, you might have issues with pets. So do you have any particular technology that you use to keep pets safe during an emergency?
Well, not so much technology, but what I encourage everybody to do is, first of all, get your animals microchipped.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the easiest way to get them back, or the most secure way of getting them back. But the other thing I always tell people is that if you're concerned about your animals, you should have two things. One is a wire kennel. They sell these fold-up wire kennels, and they're not that expensive. The thing about them is if you have to take your pet to an emergency pet shelter, if they don't have enough kennels available, they will tell you to put your animal inside of your vehicle. When I helped open one of the shelters a couple years ago, and in that case, they provided us with a total of 5 kennels. So we expect everybody to bring their own kennels. And you can buy them as low as $30.
And a big, comfortable purse or a cardboard box, probably not recommended.
Not a good idea, because you're going to be dealing with a nervous animal. Even if it's your own animal, they may be excited. When the thunderstorm hit Sunday, two of my dogs basically went running off and hide someplace.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine sent out an email on Monday saying that when he went out, he saw a number of loose animals that he hadn't seen in his neighborhood. So the thunder scared the animals.
Well, and that's a good point about the kennel, because what you want to do is you want to have your pet be comfortable with that kennel. So the time when it's not a disaster, it's a good idea to have them, you know, get used to the kennel so that it's recognized as a safe place. Because if you were to all of a sudden think that your pet would want to go into a box, that would probably freak them out just going into the box, right?
Right. What I do with my dogs is that I have a kennel set up inside of the house that has a padding inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the dogs, we leave the door open. The dogs go in and out when they want to rest. I have one dog who's very aggressive about when it's time to eat. So I actually feed the dog inside of the kennel so that she doesn't steal the other dog's food.
Oh. Now, there's an event coming up at Pearl Ridge, and I think you both are going to be there. And this is an annual event, Ready to React.
Yes,
right?
It is.
And so what are you guys going to be showing there, and what is this event all about?
Well, first off, I got to say the timing is outstanding for this. This is the Ready to React event at Pearl Ridge is the largest preparedness event of its kind in the state. We're bringing together over 30 different organizations and agencies at Pearl Ridge Uptown, Toys R Us. Here's the best part. We'll have a bunch of vehicle displays, and the kids love it. And I'll also be down there with a lot of my solar-powered gadgets and demonstrating how you can use the sun for disaster preparedness.
So wait. So where's your station? Are you going to be by the Toys R Us?
I'm going to be Toys R Us, because I thought about putting it inside, but you can't demonstrate solar stuff indoors, right? So it makes more sense out there. But this is the fourth year we've done this event.
Mm-hmm.
We're very happy to partner with Pearl Ridge to have this event happen. It attracts such a large amount of people. This is good for families, individuals, and kids. And not only is it a preparedness event, but at Ready to React this Saturday from 10 to 2 at Pearl Ridge, you'll be able to ask the questions of the subject matter experts on an array of preparedness ideas and items and things. We'll be there. Red Cross will be there. We'll have state agencies there. Mm-hmm. Wes will be there with his pet display and how to.
I'll be with the Humane Society.
Yeah. So, oh, nice. Great, yeah. Great. So, who are some of the other, let's say, exhibitors that are going to be participating in Uptown at the Uptown location?
Okay, we're going to have NOAA National Weather Service is going to be there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to learn more about hurricanes, they're going to be there for the experts. Going to be there for that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest ones really be the Red Cross. We partner with them for our evacuation shelters. If you want to know what to expect when you get to a shelter, come on down to Pro Ridge on Saturday because they're going to have a little demonstration shelter space set up. And you can visualize if you have to go to a shelter, how you can relate within that space.
Right, because when you go to a shelter, there are pet shelters or pet-ready shelters and others that won't accept pets, right? And when you go into a shelter, you have to bring in like 7 days' worth of your own food, right? You can't be yeah. going to a shelter thinking that they're going
to
feed you.
When you get to a public evacuation shelter here, you're going to find a place that might be safer than your home, but it's just a big open space.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be managed by the American Red Cross, Red Cross volunteers, and some city folks, but you have to bring all your supplies with you, and it's a lot to think about. So the other thing is you can also find out on Saturday about sheltering in place in your own home, mm-hmm. how you do that, which is actually a better option, especially if you have seniors living with you. So it's going to be all at one event, one day, this Saturday, Pro Ridge from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's outstanding selection of activities for disaster preparedness.
Mm-hmm. And now, are you going to bring any of these gadgets that you
have? I hope they show them all off. Those, you're carrying those backpacks everywhere you go, right, Wes?
No, I used to keep one in my vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Aside from having a Humane Society booth, I'll have a display of what you should have for your animals. And I'm hoping to set up a small ham station.
Oh, fantastic.
Sounds good. So this is going to be at Pro Ridge Uptown. So downtown is not going to have anything, right?
Not this time. So it's going to be Pro Ridge Uptown for the agency and department displays.
Mm-hmm.
And then Toys R Us parking lot. And that's where we're going to have the fire department and fire vehicles. We're going to have our emergency services folks down there too. We're going to have the National Guard, 93rd Civilian Support Team. And these are the folks that bring the really cool robot, and you're going to actually have an opportunity to drive their robot and see how that works. I mean, it's just going to be a really good day for everybody. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring your grandparents, everybody. And while we have clear skies and there's no Darby around, there's no hurricanes, this is when you want to start planning and preparing for the next hurricane or tsunami event. And at this event, R2R, you're going to be able to get that information and start your planning process if you have not done so already.
All right. Sounds like a great event, John. If somebody, of course, wants to find the best information when an emergency is approaching, is there a website for the city's Department of Emergency Management or a place that you would refer them?
First thing, we keep a lot of information on our website at oahudem.org. We also highly advise folks sign up for Nixel,
mm-hmm.
And that's our text and cell phone messaging system. It's free if you have unlimited text messaging. All you got to do is go to nixel.com/DEM and take a look at it, sign up. And we have almost 45,000 residents signed up to get our emergency
great.
Information.
Yeah, very good, very good. So John Cummings, of course, is the PIO over at the Department of Emergency Management. And Wes Koga teaches pet safety and a bunch of other things for the Humane Society. I want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the launch of Project Imua from the WALPS Flight Facility.
And of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, feel free to email us at feedback@bitemarks.org. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at bitemarks.
And you can follow me at Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chong, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And we leave you with our song pick of the week. Here's The Amazing and a song called Ambulance. See you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.